Hi, and welcome to the Curb Podcast. My name is Andrew Pearce, and this podcast is recorded in Whadjuk Noongar Boodja, Perth, Western Australia. Sovereignty never ceded. On this episode, I get to chat with Danny and Michael Philippou, aka Raka Raka, about their bonkers and brutal horror film debut, Talk To Me, which lands in Australian cinemas tomorrow, July 27th. This fucked up film is a possession story mixed with a touch of social commentary. Ultimately, it's a film with no safety nets. It's not mucking about at all. Talk To Me is a film that intends to make you have one of the most unsettling nights watching a horror film. And the best part is that the Philippous know that you're going to enjoy doing it. It's a new benchmark for horror films, and it instantly stands as one of the grittiest, grimiest, grueling, and grotty, gore-tastic Australian horror films ever. I am on board for whatever the Philippou brothers do going forward. On the basis of Talk To Me alone, there is nothing like this going right now. This is easily the best film I've seen this year, and arguably one of the very best horror films I've seen in a very long time. In the following interview, the Philippou brothers talk about how they crafted the film, what they learned from their explosive YouTube career, what working alongside screen legend Miranda Otto was like, and as well, what it means to be an Australian filmmaker working today. Look, take it from me. Talk To Me is a film you simply cannot miss on the big screen. I know that Australian audiences are a little bit apprehensive about going to see horror films in cinemas, but please make sure to head along and go and see it opening weekend. Forget Barbie, forget Oppenheimer. They will be around for a very long time. Talk To Me deserves to be seen with an audience, a stacked audience who is having as shocking a time as you are. Anyway, let's listen to the trailer and then we'll be right back with the interview with the Philippou brothers.
Have you seen the group chat? You're doing it again tonight?
No.
Please. It's my mum's Remembrance Day. I just want to forget about it.
Who's up?
I'll do it.
Cannot go for more than 90 seconds. Am I clear?
What happens after 90 seconds?
Don't want to stay. Light the candle to open the door. Blow it out to close it. Put your hand on it. Now say, talk to me.
Talk to me.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. Excited to be good about the film.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, congrats. I got to see it at Sundance remotely, and it was just, I watched it on my phone, which is a terrible thing to do, but it scared the shit out of me. So congrats. Oh,
cool. Yeah. Did you have headphones on?
I did. And then I was watching, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and I kept on bumping my partner who was asleep. And she kept on going, why on earth are you doing this? What are you doing? And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm watching this film and it's messing me up. So congratulations.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I guess I want to start off with talking about, this is your directorial debut. What's it like to have this film kind of out in the world, not only having, you know, rave receptions out of Sundance, but then getting picked up by A24 too?
Yeah. Just the most surreal, bizarre feeling ever. Still feels like we're dreaming, and it's everything that we've ever wanted to do. So it's just been incredible. It's insane.
Yeah, congratulations. And now it's heading out to the world in Australia. There is a distinctly Australian tone to it, of course, because, you know, you guys are Australian, but that is really quite prominent in different ways in the way the characters talk. But then, of course, we've got, you know, the Australiana aspects of, the, you know, the poor kangaroo and things like that. And yet it still feels universal. And I'm curious if you can talk about how important it was to balance that Australian aspect as well as making it a global feeling story.
You know, that wasn't really like in our minds. We weren't like thinking, oh, how do we make this international and how do we make this like, we weren't really, I guess, doing that consciously. Like our channel is YouTube, right? on YouTube is Australian, but we have like an international audience. So we'll kind of maybe just like not, we're like, oh, we should be able to do that with a movie, you know? And I think the characters are just relatable worldwide. But having that Australian flair was very exciting.
Well, we live in Australia. All the experiences were Australian. Everyone I know, like, you know, the characters that I based the characters on were Australian. So it's just like that natural dialogue and that natural, like, I was just writing what I know. And
it would have felt weird, I think, if we did it American.
Yeah.
You know, like Force really or something, because that's just not how we grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that in mind as well, has there kind of been reactions like from an international side about some of the words or, you know, the different slang that we use?
Not really.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I thought it would be more of a, like, yeah, like a bit of a, like, they'd be more separated from it, but all the humor and stuff seems to hit and like translate over there. Yeah. And like, I didn't realize how many swear words there were in the film until, you know, someone said it out to me. It's like, oh, wow. Like, yeah, I guess it really is.
There's a lot of swear words. Yeah. But it just translated so well. Like, yeah, we're sitting in audience screenings and they're hearing reactions to jokes and we're like, that felt very Australian. It's still translated, which is great.
That's awesome. Yeah. Let's talk about the fine balance of the threat of violence and then also actually seeing the violence as well, because it is, you know, there no holds barred. Like, it is just a really intense film in that capacity, and we get to see some things that just we don't really get to see very often in horror films, because there almost feels like a level of restraint of trying to make sure that, you know, you're balancing to get an audience. And I'm curious if you can talk about trying to decide what to show and what not to show.
It was like, it was a constant discussion, because we didn't want the film to just be gratuitous for gratuitous sake. We didn't want to make like a splatter film, you know? So it was, we wanted it to work as a drama film and as a horror film and for those moments to be earned. So it was always a constant discussion about kind of how far to take things. And, you know, yeah, like if you've seen our YouTube stuff, you know, you'd know that we could maybe take it further, but, you know, we kind of, yeah, we're trying to tread the line of like, what's right for the story, you know?
Yeah, and it was like, I remember the initial drafts were way more full on and way more violent, but it was about peeling it back and like finding it. And then even in post-production, like we shot like a scene that went for 2 minutes longer that's in the theatrical cut. And then like knowing, okay, this is just too much. Like peel it back and let it still be, yeah, comfortable.
Yeah, what's the amount that need, like, is right for the film?
But
like,
even then, we do definitely push the line here.
Yeah.
But it's also the manner of the way the violence is played out. Like, there is a scene where one of the characters is bashing their head on, you know, a chest of drawers. And the moment, which I think is probably the pinnacle of that, is where he hesitates for a second and then slams his head down again, like he's trying to hold back from it happening. But that level of restraint there of going, oh, I've got to stop this from happening to myself, is, it just makes the violence actually impact even more. And I'm curious if you can talk about those creative choices as well to make sure that it's not just kind of a presentation of gore or anything like that, but making sure that there is character action in there too.
But there's like you just get invested with the characters, and people were talking about how violent the opening of the movie is when really there's no blood in that opening at all. But like, it's just because like you're attached to those characters in that moment, and that somehow makes it feel more visceral, more violent when you're connected to those characters.
Yeah, the character motivation is very strong with us, like with what everyone's reaction is to things, you know, and the impact that those moments have on the characters in the world after that was very important to us. And like, yeah, it was very plotted out and planned out. So it was, and having great performers that can add that kind of, you know, character, you know, the realism of the acting, like, just adds thing a whole other layer to it too, you know. Mm. So it was great when you shooting that stuff and seeing it come together, like in the edit and stuff, was amazing.
Yeah. Let's talk about the casting as well, because the cast is so pitch perfect and great. How did you go about getting the right people for each of the roles?
It was just like trying to find the most authentic people possible. And as soon as we saw each person, we knew they were right for the character. It was such it felt like Christmas every time the casting agent would give us new audition tapes to go through. And we were really pushing. We're like, we haven't found this person yet. There were some people that took such a long time, but we were casting for nearly 2 years.
thanks to COVID as well. COVID got a little extension. So it gave us the time to really find the people that were right. And
when we did see them, we knew. And it was like, yes, yes, yes. And then, like, it was like a piece of the puzzle. And then when it all came together and, like, those, like, rehearsal processes with all the actors was the, like, oh, it was the best thing ever to see. Like, it's not just on page anymore. These amazing, talented artists, like, performing it live.
Yeah. And then, like, working it through them as well and finding other parts that you don't think fits or that you wouldn't say, would you say this a different way? Like, what do you think your motivations are here? Like tapping into them and letting them completely embody the characters as well. Like, giving them the freedom to express themselves in their roles too.
Mm. I mean, there is certainly a lot of that. And, you know, we're getting to see characters who we've almost seen before, but because of the performances, they feel new and reinvigorated. And this friendship, this kind of makeshift family that comes about from these characters is just so, it feels organic. And that, I think, leads into what you're saying about, you know, getting the right actors for the role. But with that in mind as well, you've got somebody like Miranda Otto, and I don't think I've ever seen her do something like this before. How important was it to get, like, an Aussie film icon like Miranda Otto for a character like this?
Well, thank God that she came on board and said yes, because, like, we'd already were casting so many new names or people that were, like, coming up that, like, we lost money out of the budget just by casting Sophie because she wasn't a name. And, like, having Miranda come on board, which was so amazing, like, gave us, like, a bit of wiggle room to keep casting the no-names. Like, we had her, so that was something at least. So that just gave us more freedom of casting. And she also was just so perfect for the role too, and so collaborative and warm. She was like an auntie when we met her, you know.
It was daunting to be like, who are we to direct Miranda Otto, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was so open for collaboration and amazing on set that, and she was, you know, she was full with the vibe as well of the set. Like, yeah, she was so much fun to work with.
There feels like there's like this unrestraint to her performance as well. Like, she's never really, she's given great performances and been able to have fun before, but she's not been able to have fun in this way. She's not been able to swear like this as well.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you can talk about, like you said, you know, she's a bit of an auntie in some capacity, but if you can talk about the creation of that character with her as well, what kind of freedom you gave her to play around with it.
That character was like just based on those moms that you were like loved, like there's always those friends that have the cool mom, like she lets people drink, she swears, and you always are like, oh, that mom's so cool. Like, I remember like being like attracted to like my friends' moms and like being wanting to be around them, like they're so fun to be around. And so like they were like tapping into that. And then also on set there was a lot of stuff that was written, but then also giving Miranda, like, we did a lot of improv as well that day. It was like throwing curveballs, like change what the kids say to her, change what she says to them. It was always just like mixing it up and like just
there was once she came up and said, can I swear in this moment? We're like, yeah, go for it, it's fine. And then she boom delivered, you like, whoa. Like, yeah, it was, and man, you want to use every take of Miranda. She's just so,
she's
great,
so fun. Yeah. And that was a really fun day on set when she's questioning the kids,
when she's questioning the kids. Yeah, we did a lot of fun.
That was all shot one day. It was so
try not to laugh like during a take because it's just so hilarious. Yeah.
So with that in mind as well, like, you guys have got a really well-established YouTube career and, you know, following and all that kind of stuff, which is so vibrant and energetic. How do you transfer that over to a feature film? It's got to be different energies. Is that right?
You know, it kind of wasn't in a way. Like, it was crazy on set, like, you know, because we have, I guess, yeah, just too much energy, you know, but it was kind of like, we were up against the clock. It was a 5-week shoot. It was supposed to be an 8-week shoot. So we're really up against the clock. So that energy, I think, helped it. But then also there needed to be times to peel it back because we are dealing with heavy subject matter and there's some really intense scenes. It's like, you know, putting times, you know, to put tape on Danny's mouth. So we're not jumping around.
But then it was also like talking to Sam, but there were some days like we need to have racket energy here because there's 30 setups that we need to get today and it's impossible to like do that normally. You have to, we had to go rogue sometimes.
Yeah, we have to do it the YouTube way for a little bit. Yeah.
So, all right. So is there a difference between Raka Raka energy and, you know, your energy as filmmakers, like as named filmmakers now?
Well, yeah, I think that like it's like about talking to the actors and taking time. Like, oh, let's try one like this. Let's do this. Like, that's one energy. And then there was one where there's a montage in the scene and we had 2 hours to get like 30, 40 shots.
And we're just like, move over there, do this over here, move that, good, do it, sir. Bring that in, move that, move it, move it. Like literally screaming and like two camera people running around, crew members trying to keep up and like doing it. And then the actors like feeling that energy, playing music in the room and like encapsulating the chaos. Was like, that was like the Racco energy days where it was like, well, we had to go rogue.
But it's also like with the energy, it's like not taking yourself so seriously, you know, it's like just being loose with it and being open for collaboration and like working with people. You know, I've been on some film sets where it just feels like there's a lot of entitlement or something. I don't know. It's like, I just wanted to be like, we're all together, a team making something together, you know, and that everyone's there to help. It's like, you know, being a team as opposed to like against people.
Yeah.
With that in mind, like Australian horror has kind of come and gone, and it's, you know, flitted here and there, and then we've had a slight renaissance with like the Babadook and Relic and things like that, and they're a certain style of Australian horror. They're a little bit more I guess grounded is the word that people would use, but I'm curious, you know, you're kind of coming in a balance that there is a grounded aspect to it, but it's also that kind of gnarlier stuff that we might have expected from the Ausploitation era. Is there a fun in being able to play with that and kind of distort what Australian horror can be?
Well, yeah, it's just like being true to ourselves, and that's just our art, the way that we express ourselves. So when I look at it, I can't really look at it through that lens. I'm like, are we tapping into this? I don't know what we're tapping into. I don't know like where we're sitting on like the shelf of like all this stuff, but it's just like our voices and our way of being creative. And it's just like translating what we did on YouTube a little bit to the screen a bit.
Yeah, it's our style. And you know what was amazing, speaking of Australian horror, going to like Berlin Film Festival and Sundance and seeing so much Australian horror there. It's like really, I feel like has a resurgence, and hopefully all this, you know, their films, our film helps like open the doors to like for Australian filmmakers to take, you know, I guess more like, yeah, like a risk, like a risky risks, you know, yeah, in different genres and stuff. Like, I'd love to see that, because I think we've got so many awesome stories to tell down here in the land down under.
Well, that's it. I mean, like in talking with filmmakers, I've talked to a lot of them over the years, and genre is almost a dirty word in Australia because we're so, you know, adept and attached to like documentaries and dramas and maybe a comedy here or there, but it's always like, oh, don't do horror, don't do sci-fi because that doesn't sell. But then clearly with your film, it has sold. So is there, do you feel some kind of responsibility in leading a new pack of filmmakers going forward? Obviously it's, you know, a big call because the film's not really launched yet, but I think you must feel that.
I don't want to look at it that way. Like, that was just too much. I don't want to feel like I'm leading anyone. We're just like literally just.
If it's just like we've kind of maybe like opened the doors a bit, and like we're happy that hopefully they can let more people be like speaking that, you know, and pursue genre. And like, you know, it's weird. Like, yeah, I guess we kind of, I guess Australians like kind of held back a little bit on chasing the genre stuff. It's like, the Americans love it. I don't know. In general, Americans and overseas people love Australians. Like, no one hates an Australian, you know? So let's make more Australian films a genre for a worldwide audience. Why not?
Well, that's it. Like, there's always that conversation about, do you go for the domestic box office or do you go for the international? And, you know, yes, horror has done really well in internationally, mostly in America. And that's quite an important thing. Does that play in your mind as well? I mean, obviously with YouTube, I know that often, like with YouTubers, you got to look at what your audience reaches, how many viewers and all this kind of stuff. Did that play into your mind in the creation of the script and writing what the audience reach might be?
Well, we always just, I always, like when my editing is putting an audience first and thinking about it, but like it really, the script really did just come from expressing ourselves and
well, even YouTube, like we never were like, going after a specific thing or a different country or thing like that. Like we were just doing our thing. And then like, you know, the people that like, that's the great thing about social media is you can find your, you know, your home kind of thing. Like you can see people that you relate with and like, you enjoy their content and the way they make things. It's like, we found that. And like, we saw early, like a lot of our audience wasn't actually Australian with the YouTube stuff. It was international. So I don't know. It was a willful bliss to say, oh, you know, why can't I just feel the film then? You know,
well, it was like, yeah, we don't like to, if we analyze it too much, I think it starts to feel a bit manufactured. So it's just about just trying to be
yourself and express yourself.
And like, if we, because if we went at that lens, like what's right for audiences and stuff, I know that there would have been a lot of stuff that we would have peeled back and been done more generic to, this is what works, so let's do that because that's going to hit this audience. It's like just make the movie that we're proud of with the team and stuff, and then, like, you know, whoever likes it, I guess.
Yeah. So with that in mind, what kind of cinematic influences do you have as filmmakers? What was the stuff that you grew up watching?
Yeah, like, even like very, very young, the thing that like wanted me to become a writer or like directing was like Goosebumps books. I was so obsessed with Goosebumps books and R.L. Stine. Like, I remember that being a big thing. And
well, mine was more like, I remember watching really young The Sopranos and being like drawn, and then hearing about, like, this is a TV show that's well written and things like that. And then, like, when you watch it, even if, as like, you're young, you don't really understand what it is, but it has this effect on you and you don't know why. It's like, that's something that's well written. Like things that I think we've just like kind of borrowed from like all different
influences. There's so many different influences.
Ridiculous ones, and then like real, you know.
Like from Xena Warrior Princess to like Intreatment on HBO, Bong Joon-ho. There's so many different influences that like we tap into. Yeah, it's never any like one specific thing, but it's just like, I love The Return, this Russian film, or Let the Right One In, or, you know, it's just everywhere. Like, because you just consume so much that everything just lives in there subconsciously. I don't know.
Then like you see things that like connects with the audience, like even like they say the Pixar films and stuff, where it's like, it's a kid's film, but adults love it too. It's like, why is that connecting with so many people, all different walks of life? It's like, I guess, like, just like, yeah, consuming things and seeing like what works. Then, like, I guess, you know, we create our own style out of all the stuff that we watched as nerdy kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. Like, you're talking about watching The Sopranos too young. And it's like, for me, I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre when I was 13. And that really informed what kind of stuff I would be seeking out and watching. Is there, like,
I was 13 years old.
No, younger. You were 10.
Was that? No, was that?
13? Yeah, it was like 2003. You were 10.
Oh, 2003. When I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 2003 version, in cinema, and that was the first time that I walked out of cinema, you know, because I got so scared. And I like swear I was hearing chainsaws for the next month or so. I don't know.
So we're the next gen after you. That was like, there was the remake that we saw.
But then you look at the original like that and you go, fuck, it's even scarier.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I was saying, like, I watched it, I was 13, and I remember it so clearly. I vomited watching that film in the scene where she gets put on the hook, and it's just like, I just went there, you know. And there's moments in Talk to Me where I'm like, this, if I was 13, that is the kind of the visceral reaction I might have. I know that, like, obviously this has certain ratings and stuff like that, and it's for a certain audience, but is there a hope that like a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old might, you know, discover this film?
That's a rite of passage and a coming of age, is to watch something you're not supposed to, like a movie that's too scary. Like, it's so cool. Yeah, I like, how cool if that taps into, and like, we got to do that with some of our Racket stuff. Some people are like, you really fucking traumatize us in our childhood. I'm like, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's like, no, but you should listen to your parents, and then when they're asleep, watch it.
definitely. Well, I've really appreciated being able to talk with you guys. Like, this is seriously no lie, like, this is the best film I've seen this year. I've been itching to watch it again. It hasn't left me. It is just it's the kind of horror film that I just want to hold on to and be like, yeah, this is something serious. I'm excited to see what people say about it. I'm excited to see what the audience reaction is like. Now it's heading out to Australia. What's your hopes and dreams for Australian audiences getting to watch it?
Well, yeah, just that they enjoy it and then see themselves on screen would be so cool.
And then embrace it and then just be proud of like Australian cinema more. Like, and like, I think that'll help like make people want to make stuff for like in Australia as well. Yeah. It's like, look, you can do this and be.
So many young people you talk to are like, oh, it's an Australian film. For some reason, there's this cultural cringe. Yeah, it's such a thing.
Yeah, it's like, let's erase that and be like proud of that. And like, and then it's make stuff for international audiences, but in the Australian way, you know?
Yeah, it makes me really happy to hear that. I cover Australian films predominantly. And, you know, I hear that from a lot of filmmakers, that there is almost like this shame or this cultural stigma about making Australian films. So it's great to hear it from you both, that like we've got to find that pride again. So hopefully it gets that. Yeah. Once again, thank you guys so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see it. I'm getting to see it. I think it's on the 11th of July here in Perth again. So I'm looking forward to seeing the big screen. Can't wait.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
No worries.